So we are recording. So good afternoon, everyone. Welcome to our faculty forum. And what this is an additional venue for us to provide faculty feedback on the new interim expressive activity policy and also the interim doxing policy. And both of those were introduced on January 24th, 2024. And as you know, these policies affect everyone, faculty, staff, and students across all of our campuses. And so what we're going to do is provide your thoughts, your ideas. They matter. And we're going to provide them to the University Assembly as the university works through this. And so this is an opportunity for public comment. And wanted to provide some context. So the university introduced these interim policies in response to a review by the Office of Civil Rights. And this OCR review affects many universities, including Cornell, of course. And this is because of our responsibilities under Title VI of the Civil Rights Act of 1964. And for those of you who don't know what Title VI is, Title VI is it prohibits the intentional discrimination on the basis of race, color, or national origin. And so what this faculty forum is an opportunity to gather faculty feedback, share it with the University Assembly, Provost, General Counsel. And so after we finish our discussion, we'll make the audio from the faculty forum, as well as any comments written in the chat, we'll make them public. And then we'll send them to these offices. So our office here, we'll send them to the Office of the Assembly, University Assembly, Office of the Provost, and Office of General Counsel. And then ultimately, we're also having a faculty senate meeting at the beginning of March or mid-March, where both the Provost and General Counsel will come. And so that's another opportunity. We'll also consider a resolution that was introduced by some of our senators. And then ultimately, all of this feedback will shape the interim and make it ultimately a policy on doxing and a policy on expressive activity on campus. And all of this will undergo the review process that's in place. And this is the Executive Policy Review Group. And so they'll oversee the final revisions and approval of these policies. And so I think everybody who's here for being part of this conversation. And I'd like to say that our input matters as we move forward. So I'm going to start with the land acknowledgement. Cornell University is located on the traditional homelands of the Gayokono, the Cayuga Nation. The Gayokono are members of the Haudenosaunee Confederacy, an alliance of six sovereign nations with historic and contemporary presence on this land. The Confederacy precedes the establishment of Cornell University, New York State, and the United States of America. We acknowledge the painful history of the Gayokono dispossession and honor the ongoing connection of the Gayokono people, past and present, to these lands and waters. And I think it's always important to note that this acknowledgement, land acknowledgement, was reviewed and approved by the traditional Gayokono leadership. And as we move forward, it'd be great if faculty can limit their comments to 2 minutes so that we can hear from as many people as possible. And with that, we'll get started. So if you want to provide feedback, just put your hand up and I will go in order. This could be a really short faculty forum. So, anyone want to provide feedback to the university? Go. Yes, please, Richard. Oh, and it would be helpful if you give your name and department. I think that will be helpful for everybody.
Richard Bensel, Department of Government. I have a comment that leads to a question. The comment is that the most serious violation of free expression this year was President Pollack's threatened punishment of Professor Russell Rickford for comments he made off the Ithaca campus as a private individual. So the question is, that I would pose for the University Assembly, does the interim expressive activity policy cover the repression of free speech by central administration officials? If not, why not?
Okay, I will, all of these comments will go to the university, central administration, but I will say that at the moment, Professor Rickford is on a leave of absence and has not been, is not under review, has not been threatened with termination. So I can say that much. Anyone else? Yes, Chris, go ahead. Please, name,
Hi,
full
Chris
name.
Schaefer from Biomedical Engineering. There's a few changes to the policy as written now that I think are absolutely essential. Some of these are just tweaks of a few words, but with something as thorny as trying to define time, manner, and place restrictions on protest, I think the details matter a lot. So, I just want to talk about three of them that at least stand out to me. The first is, as the policy is written now, it states that outdoor demonstrations with more than 50 individuals on Cornell's campus, that it is, quote, expected that those will be registered with the university. And I understand that the motivation here is not to try to stop those protests, but to try to better deploy university resources to ensure safety, to plan around them, and things like that. And I think that is good. But the policy also states that if you don't comply with these regulations, you'll be punished, or you'll be charged, adjudicated, and potentially punished through university disciplinary channels. So now that registration requirement does have a suppressive effect. The other thing is how to register something is not particularly clear. I followed all of these websites and I was able to have able to identify three different durations before an event that I needed to register based on criteria that weren't specified that ranged from 2 days to 4 weeks. So I would suggest that the university revise that to say that registration is not required for any outdoor demonstration. But for outdoor demonstrations with more than 50, the university encourages registration so that they can help and leave it at that. The second is this ridiculous prohibition against carrying a stick in a protest. This is how people protest. They make funny signs. I've enjoyed making them myself and walk around with funny signs to attract attention and raise awareness of their issue. Yes, someone could take that stick and hit somebody else with it and hurt them. Trying to prevent that by banning sticks is a massive overreaction, and it's going to create an incredibly difficult enforcement challenge. Who is going to be asked to go and wade into a protest with a bunch of signs and identify the people who are holding sticks and tell them that they are going to be the ones who are going to be accused and prosecuted for this violation. So it sets up things as being antagonistic. It's patently ridiculous. This is how protests work, and it's trying to mitigate against something that is highly unlikely. The last is for candlelight vigils, which again are a long tradition of protest and remembrance in this country. And while I understand that there is a fire risk with any open flame, I do think people can manage candles in a pretty safe way. I'm not aware of any major fire damage having occurred as a result of candles at a vigil. And so, again, including this restriction, which feels to me like it is coming from a liability limitation perspective, as opposed to from a perspective about trying to promote free speech while at the same time requiring time, manner, and place restrictions that would prevent that protests from interrupting normal campus activities. Banning candlelight vigils has nothing to do with that balance. It's being driven from some kind of liability perspective. It has no place in this policy. So those changes. Outdoor registration is never required for more than 50. It is encouraged so the university can help and eliminate the bans on sticks and candles.
Thank you, Chris. And that reminds me to just share with everyone who's here that there were three changes. So basically, this interim policy is a collection of all the potential policies across campus. And the three additions were the restriction of sticks, the restriction of candles, and more than 24 hours occupying a space. That's a resource that I've also shared with everyone. And so if anyone else has feedback, I think this is very helpful. Thank you, Chris. Yes, Charlie.
The current proposal says that
Charlie, if you could give your full name
I'm
and
sorry, Charlie Walcott, Neurobiology and Behavior. The current policy or the proposed policy says that for demonstrations of less than 50 people, you don't have to notify anybody. My question is, what happens if you propose a small demonstration? It grows to exceed the number of 50. What do you do then? You can't notify in advance, and yet you may have started this with all good intentions of keeping it small. It seems to me that that's a tricky problem.
Thank you, Charlie. And I can say I've heard Vice President Barner say that is not something that you can foresee. And so it would just be a spontaneous sort of a spontaneous protest. And then public safety office will manage that as best as possible. Anyone else have feedback for the University Assembly? Well, what I can do is remind people while you're sort of thinking through what comments you wanted to provide that the University Assembly will be compiling all of the feedback. And playing a robust role in revision of this. We will have both the resolution that's pending discussed in our Faculty Senate meeting on March 13th. I believe that's the right date. I should double check. And maybe Jill, you can correct me, but the second Wednesday of March, we are having the pending resolution discussed, and we'll also have the provost and Vice President Barner in attendance. So, any thoughts that come from review of the interim policies, the comparison chart, hearing the different concerns that faculty have? So, please come to the Senate meeting for yet another opportunity for us to give feedback. So today is for intake. And if there aren't any more comments, then, I'm not going to belabor this. So, yes, Beth,
I couldn't
just.
find my hand raised, sorry. I just want to also remind everyone here that if you don't make a comment right now, there is a link that we can send you that we've sent out for the University Assembly to collect feedback. I think that we are meeting next week, so we meet every other week. So please do add your feedback there if you don't provide it here.
And Liz, give your name and department.
Hi, Liz Parker, Catherwood Library. This is actually a question. The messaging surrounding the way that this policy has been described to staff has differed substantially from the way it was described to faculty. I'm co-chair of the Academic Assembly for RTE Librarians and was reached out to by a couple of librarians whose staff members approached them with concerns about the way that these policies were described to staff, especially in terms of consequences. It doesn't appear that a recording of that meeting was made available. Is there any way the assembly or university assembly would have information on that, or at least be able to broadly disseminate what was expressed to staff, considering it sounded significantly different from what we were told at the town hall last Tuesday?
So is this the university assembly from February 6th?
No, this was a town hall that was last a week ago Thursday.
Oh, the employee assembly.
Yes.
Oh, okay. I don't know, but I can check. I can definitely have us look into whether there was a recording and where it's going to be posted. I do know that they are trying to post all of these things in a common place on the Office of Assemblies website.
Yes, this was, I believe, sponsored. It was a town hall akin to the one that Kotlikoff had for us 2 days after. And I actually spoke to the library's employee assembly representative, is in Catherwood Library. And according to him, the assembly itself was unclear if there were recordings being made available. But the discrepancy in the messaging is a concern.
And the messaging between what you heard in that
consequences for actions of expressive action and responsibilities were dictated to staff in a way that they were not dictated to faculty, I think for reasons that most of us can probably gather why. And it's something that I would like clarification on, especially since it seems that a lot of this policy is reliant on staff to report these activities, whether or not staff might be comfortable with what they're being asked to do, if it's a requirement of their employment, because they lack the protections of faculty.
Yes, I'm very appreciative that you brought this up, Liz, and I can even bring special attention to this for both the provost and General Counsel Varner, so that they can address that in our faculty senate meeting.
Thank you. Yeah, it's something that comes up in the library a lot, given the you know, striated nature of our workforce.
And actually, this is really important for all RTE. So RTE have the senior titles are faculty, but the other titles are in the employee assembly, and so they have that same sort of demarcation of who's faculty and who's not considered faculty, but are a general employee of the university. And so this is critical. So thank you very much for bringing it here, Liz. And while we're waiting for the next person to put their hand up, I will let you know that I put in the comparison document for everyone who's here, where it compares the pre-existing policies with the interim. And then also in response to Beth, I've put the link to where you can actually put your comments in writing if you're not going to contribute to the faculty forum today. And I just encourage more people to take this venue. So yes, Mark, name and department, please.
Mark Lewis from the School of Operations Research and Information Engineering. Just a quick question, Eva. I think I just missed it. I'm wondering, when they take all these comments and then employee assembly takes the comments into consideration, what happens next? Is there going to be a retry at this policy, or do we replace the interim with something else? I'm just curious. Thanks for that response as you can.
Yes. So what I've actually, since it was, so one of the things I guess I should share with everyone is that general counsel went around to the academic deans, the medical deans, the university faculty committee, and all the executive committees for each assembly. So before introducing this as an interim policy. And between that first draft and what was introduced in January, there was revisions and changes. And then even in response to the introduction on January 24th and the university assembly meeting on February 6th, there was yet another set of revisions. So my anticipation is that this will continue to be revised, but at some point, this will go to the Executive Policy Review Group. So I think at this point, March and February and March were seen as the public comment period, giving opportunity for review and revision. And then ultimately in April, they will take it to the Executive Policy Review Group. And that's the group that will then finally approve this. And what they're doing is, once they feel like they've gotten something relatively close to a final version, they will share this again, obviously, with all the assemblies, but they will also make sure that it doesn't conflict with current policies that are on the books already. And so, as I understand it, that will be the process. And this is something that both the provost and General Counsel Varner can speak to when they come to the Faculty Senate in March.
So can I ask another question to you? I don't have my hand up, but no one else has their hand up. So my follow-up question to that, I guess, is that,
within your 2-minute limit, go for it.
My follow-up question to that, I'm still Mark from Maury. My follow-up question for that would then be, as changes are being made, is the policy also changing in a dynamic fashion? And are we living under this dynamic policy reiteration or under the interim policy or under no policy? So what policy are we living under until this is actually formed to be an actual policy? Thanks.
That's very helpful. And I'm the reason we're having this faculty forum is to inform the content that comes to the Faculty Senate. And so we can ask the provost and General Counsel Varner to address that. Are we seeing these revisions enacted, or are we sticking with the interim as it is in the meantime? So I will make sure that they receive all of this feedback. Eric, would you mind putting your hand up and speaking to what you just put in the chat? Go for it. Just also give your department and your full name.
Sure. Hi, Eric Born, Department of German Studies. So thank you for the link to the comparison chart for the expressive activity policy. I was just wondering, is there a comparison chart for the interim anti-doxing policy? I wasn't sure if I missed something there.
No, there hasn't been one that's been produced, as I understand it, because there was no existing doxing policy. This is a brand new policy. And that's directly in response to behaviors, I guess I would call it best, that we've seen on campus over this academic year. And students in particular, when I've gone around to different student groups, have had concerns about doxing. Faculty as well, but most vociferously, I've heard it from the student groups. And so there is no comparison document, as I understand it.
Thank you.
Of course. And Chris, I see your comment that the prohibition of poles and sticks.
Yeah. It's just it's not called out in that comparison document. It was overlooked.
That is definitely an introduction. That's something new that's been introduced to campus. Yes, Hadass, full name and department.
Sure, Hadass Ritz, Mechanical and Aerospace Engineering. I'm not sure if you can answer this, but last week sometime, some people, I don't know, I assume they were students, went through my building chanting something. I don't know what it was. I actually couldn't understand what they were saying. They were very enthusiastic about it, but I couldn't understand what they're saying. So that sort of thing, like walking through an academic building during the workday, chanting like that, is that behavior that's prohibited by this interim policy?
So as I understand it, no. So as long as they were not using microphones or megaphones in an interior space, then that was permitted by the policy.
So I couldn't tell if that constituted, preventing normal behavior of the university. I'm sorry, I don't have the right language.
Yeah, but the prohibition of university activities or
Right.
yes. I believe that would not constitute that, but I am not obviously administering these policies.
Sure. Yeah. So I guess maybe a general comment is it's not really clear to me what is, how this will be interpreted or what is and isn't prohibited, in the language that's there. I wouldn't be able to interpret it accurately, I don't think. So maybe that's a shortcoming of the policy.
And I imagine because they were in public spaces and not in private labs or things like that, that would be accepted as long as it wasn't being amplified. Yes, Chris.
Just to speak to that, looking at the policy, so registration, quote, is expected for all indoor events. Indoor events should not disrupt regular conduct of teaching, research, business, or other activities. You can't block any entrances and can't carry sticks or poles. So, Hadas, if you were disrupted, if they carried sticks or poles, and if they didn't register it, then the university could make a decision to prosecute under this policy.
Well, registration is expected, not mandatory. So that part.
Well, I don't know. He's like it's expected and violations will be prosecuted. That is exactly the kind of language that's chilling. It's the definition of chilling language.
I do know the language is changing, and I believe is going to encourage. Yeah.
Until I hear how it's changing, I'm going to keep saying this at every forum.
Absolutely. And that I think that's appropriate. And in terms of the students going through the buildings, I believe they did not go into any classrooms and they did not use any amplification. And so for that reason, they were not in violation. But I don't know that to be necessarily true. And so, yeah, Mark.
Sorry, I'm eating while I'm talking, but it seems to me then, given what we just heard, Eve, that one piece of advice that at least the provost and council should, the general counsel should hear, is that in cases where things are obviously going to change, what are we waiting for? If you know you're going to change them, why not just change them now? And if we're actually operating under a policy which we know we're going to change, it just seems silly to me. So. I'm being taped. I guess they'll hear that, but it just seems like an obvious thing to do to fix the things that they know are going to change anyway. And then use the new policy and put it somewhere where we can iterate until we actually get to a firmer policy. Just a suggestion.
Thank you for that suggestion. And Chris, I saw you unmute. No? Okay. Did other people want to contribute their feedback? Yeah, go for it, Liz. Liz Parker again.
Yeah, this is actually a follow-up to what was just said, but my understanding, and I know that Vice Provost Kotlikoff sort of said that they were being punished under existing policy, but given that students are being disciplined under this new interim policy, that is a question. If it is currently under revision, how are they being disciplined under it? It seems a bit like a catch-22.
Well, students are being if there's any disciplinary action, it's using the current student c codes of conduct. So I presume that it's they're acting on whatever is currently posted in the interim policy, not any revision of that, and then it's going through the Office of Student Conduct. At least that's my understanding. And Richard, did you want to, whatever you have in the chat, would you like to contribute it verbally? Oh, and I see actually we haven't heard from Jim. Jim, it would be great to hear from you as well.
Well,
Oh, no, I
sorry,
was just.
Jim, go ahead. I've already
No,
talked.
I was just going to reiterate what I said. I'm happy to reiterate what I said in the chat. It's
Oh, and
completely.
Jim, if you could give your full name
Yeah.
and
My name is Jim DeRosa. I'm the assistant director at Cathie Wood Library. I'm a librarian RTE faculty. And yeah, I mean, I found, to be honest, I found some of the answers that were given at the last thing about what policy students were currently being referred to the judicial administrator under. Inconsistent. It seemed to there. I do know that at one point it was said it's being done under the existing policies, but follow-up answers seem to move away from that. And of course, you know, with some of the stuff, some of the, I think honestly at this point, you know, it remains to be seen because some of these things are just put into place. The police get involved. They refer something, and then we will see what ends up actually being, for lack of a better term, the charges involved, whether it will be under the new policy. I know some of the early statements around this seem to imply that it was very much under the new policy. So I do believe that there hasn't been a lot of consistency, and it's concerning. And it also is concerning to me if we're being told this policy is changing, both because there's the question of, well, which policies will students be and other members of the community, students, staff, faculty, be held accountable for? And that inconsistency and questioning in and of itself can cause a chilling effect because it's not even a matter that you can look and say, okay, well, here's what we're going to adhere to. It's all, well, it's going to change. You plan something for next week, keep an eye out. So it's concerning, and I do understand, you know, what the university is responding to, but yeah, for what it's worth, I don't feel like we've actually I have heard this question has come up, I've heard some of the answers, and for what it's worth, and it might just be my own lack of understanding. I am not feeling like I have a good understanding of which policies students who we have seen be interviewed by the police, have their IDs taken. I'm not sure what they're going to actually be held account, like under what standards they're going to be held accountable for those actions. And that in and of itself, that question and that inconsistency is a concern.
I guess I want to first make sure that I'm clear on what you're saying, but I've put inside the chat the link to the current student Office of Student Conduct and Community Standards. And I should remind you, because it's not the same judicial advisory system that they had previously. So a couple of years ago, it was moved into the Office of of Student and Campus Life, and it is now something that focuses more on restorative and education practices. And so that is the office that's overseeing any concerns about student behavior that violate the interim policy. But is that what you're mentioning? Is that a
Yeah, apologies for using the outdated terminology. This
Oh,
was
okay. Yeah. So I just
what I
wanted
was
to be
referring to.
clear to everyone here
Yeah.
that
So
it has
my
been.
apologies for my yeah, I fell back into, you know, I still
It,
call RPCC RPU from time to time. It
yeah,
happens. I
no, it
apologize.
totally makes sense, but not everybody knows that it changed a few years ago, and it's under student and campus life and is much more about restorative justice and education. But I will also share that any discipline that happens will be sort of consolidated and presented at the end of the year in an annual report with de-identified. So we will know what the concerns or sorry, what the outcomes were for any violations, but we it will not be tied to any individual identity. So there will be an accounting at the end of the academic year. Richard.
Yeah, that's a change. I was chair of the Campus Codes Committee last year, and we went through the Ann Coulter event and asked the administration what punishment was being meted out. We didn't ask for names, we asked for examples to see what was going on, and it was refused. And one of the problems with this policy is secrecy that is associated with the punishment handed out, meted out by the central administration to staff, faculty, and students. The secrecy that is associated with this is really chilling, using Chris's words, really chilling. It's a little bit Stalinesque, 1936. You get hauled before the party committee, and what happens to you? No one knows. This is a serious problem because in civil disobedience, you have to be aware of what the punishment might be when you decide that the protest is worth your while. And when the central administration refuses to say what the punishment is, you cannot make that calculation. And so civil disobedience becomes really problematic.
So the Office of Student Conduct does share at the end of the year what all of the disciplinary actions have been without tied to an individual, and they don't actually reveal in the moment what's happened to the students who have violated any code of conduct. And so, yeah.
It was a flat refusal. And this policy includes staff and faculty, remember. We don't know what happened to Russell Rickford.
Nothing has happened to Russell Rickford, so he has taken a leave of absence.
He has taken a leave of absence. We do not know that nothing has happened to him.
I can say that to you definitively. He's on a leave of absence at this time.
No doubt he's on a leave of absence. How he was encouraged to take that leave of absence and what punishment was held over his head if he didn't, we do not know that, Eve.
I can definitively tell you that nothing was held over his head. He personally decided to take a leave of absence, and he's on that leave of absence until the end of the academic year, and no action has been taken by the university in
I
his
think you should read the message that President Pollack and the chair of the Board of Trustees sent out to all the faculty.
Yes, I have. Yes. Okay. Chris?
So, not so much about this policy, but just kind of some context. A lot of this is being put forward as strategies to try to minimize disruption of research, teaching, normal university operations, and things like that by protest activities. I don't know about other folks, but I would say like Slope Day interrupts university operations and teaching far more than any protest I've ever been involved with. I live on North Campus. Fraternity and sorority rush is hugely disruptive to folks' living environment around North Campus with lots of noise late at night. Around homecoming, the fucking band comes through North Campus playing as loud as they can to wake us all up so we can get excited about football games. There's a lot of things that happen on campus that cause minor disruptions to teaching, research, and university normal operations that we celebrate. There's no reason that peaceful protests that unearth issues that we should think about shouldn't also be celebrated. And this policy is it's just the opposite of that.
And I guess I think providing the context that this institution, along with many others, is under review by the Office of Civil Rights. And it's in response to that and understanding the responsibilities of the institution to the Title VI of the Civil Rights Act that this was introduced in that context. And so this is really taking for OCR, all of our policies, collecting them in one place and providing that. So I want to remind people of that context because that is really the spirit of this. It was not to introduce something new, but rather to collective take all of the different policies that are appropriate to freedom of expression, expressive activity, putting them in one place for the OCR. review. So,
And in fact, Eve, I would say, as I said earlier, my objections are very specific, and they all center on new additions that were made in this interim policy. And I want to be careful here because I'm not privy to how these discussions are occurring. But for me, the role of counsel's office here is to defend the university in the Title VI investigation. It's not to set the policy. Policy should be set by the faculty and by appropriate administration. And the counsel's office should be in charge of defending that policy.
so most
When
importantly, this
counsel's office gets in front and starts driving policy, I think we start to make policy based on edge cases and risk aversiveness that is just not, it's not compatible with the goals of the university.
and Chris, one of the things I should push back a little bit. This does not sit with the faculty. This is for the entire Cornell community. And so the university assembly oversees this process. And so
Agreed.
we
I'm
are,
sorry. Members of the university community.
yeah. So we are providing faculty feedback from our vantage point to the university assembly, and I do want to make that very clear, that really that change in the policy, it sits with them. But I take your comments also about general counsel guiding this and leading this versus being responsive to what the UA then proposes. Yes, Mark.
So first, I should say that a quick apology to my colleagues that are here. I'm on the University Faculty Committee, and I did not catch all the details of all of this. So we should have probably done a better job of vetting this before, at least giving feedback before to the provost and to the general counsel. But I want to say something else, which is that I take, if I understand what you said earlier, Eve, is that a lot of this policy is sort of bringing together pieces of different policies from around the university and putting it into one place so one could have a clear sense of this. What I think this is telling us is that wherever those policies were drawn from, there were issues with them then, and they should be corrected. I mean, it doesn't really matter that they were drawn from other policies that were in place. If you were walking down the street and you have a stick in your hand and you are not doing anything but protesting, it would seem odd that the police would come be called because of some policy. I think that probably would never happen. But now you put a policy in place and someone points to it and the police get called and that causes issues. So I think what's going on here is what you're hearing is even if they were drawn from other places, that then there's a problem with the other places too, and it should probably be corrected. Yeah, that's all. Thank you.
So I should make comment. So one, the no sticks on campus is new. So that is, there were three changes on
Sorry,
campus.
that's just an example though. I mean, you know that, right? I mean,
But
just pointing out one particular place that things probably should change.
so this was dropped on January 24th, maybe January 26th. I spoke with some students from the student assembly, and they were very concerned about the time limit between noon and one. And they were very upset about that, felt like that was chilling. That was not new. That was part of our policy. It was already pre-established and pre-existing. So I think there are two factors here. One, we're in the year of a theme year of free expression. And I think that has allowed people to be very attentive to what we have as our pre-existing policy for expressive activity. So this is healthy. It's a healthy discussion. And that's the whole idea of us going to all the different assemblies. We're doing the public comment. We're doing the right things, I think. And I think we're being inclusive. We've had multiple opportunities for faculty to come in and give our feedback, and I continue to make them available as long as we need them. But I want us to remember that a lot of this was already there. But because of our attention, because of the politics, the freedom of expression theme here, I think we're being more attentive than we ever have been. So I think that's a healthy thing. And then also, I think there has been a responsiveness and a revision, and the UA will keep taking faculty feedback, student feedback, employee feedback, and integrating it and revising. So I think this is healthy. Yes, Chris.
Sorry, I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, we have more opportunity, and I know
Oh,
you'll be at the
I
Senate
remember.
meeting. Oh, you got it?
Yes. Okay. The interim policy combined a bunch of existing things, And then it added new things. And if it was just going to combine existing things so that there was one place so that this Title VI investigation could move forward more simply, then it would have just combined existing things. There was already a policymaking effort in putting forth the interim policy, and the discussions are happening after that policymaking effort. So, no, I think the cart was before the horse, and now we're in damage control. If they wanted to do it, quote, right, they could have just put together these are existing policies in one place. And here's our process going forward for figuring out what, if any, changes would be made. So I want to push back a little bit on, this is all happening right. This interim policy introduced new things without debate.
So I will say, I'm going to push back even a little bit more. So I am not obviously in a position to defend this. This is not, I am totally neutral on this because this has nothing to do with me except for facilitating our ability to give feedback. And so I can say that counsel came to the Office of the Dean of Faculty and said, I am going to be introducing two interim policies. Is there an opportunity for me to speak with faculty? And I offered the University Faculty Committee. And so on December 20th, 2023, it was brought to that meeting, and just before the holidays. I know that same conversation happened with employees and students. And then that shaped a revision that then became the interim policy in January of 2024, so at the end of January. Within 10 days or so, the University Assembly had their first meeting, and this was the plan from the very start. Was we need to have something in place. We'll put this with feedback from the different groups and academic deans and the medical deans and vice provosts and these different assemblies. Here's the interim policy. So that already went under revision. The plan always was, now University Assembly, please gather feedback from our community. And that's what February was supposed to be. Because of the strength of the concerns, and some of them valid, then we have extended that public comment period from just February to February and March. So all of this was in, it was planned, and it's not necessarily a pushback to those three changes. But those three changes were meaningful to the community. And so it's important that the provost and general counsel know that it's important to our community and we don't like it. And so that's what these things are. And so I just want to say this was a deliberate consultative process. It's intended to roll out the way that it did. And I maybe it was me being a little bit blind to thinking that this opportunity for public comment wasn't going to be sufficient. So I always intended to have it on the, I had it immediately on the February, our very first Faculty Senate meeting, but now we've had a town hall faculty forum and now a March Faculty Senate meeting so that we can get as many voices as possible to shape these policies. So,
The
it's
interim policy had had no policy changes and was just a consolidation of existing policy, then I would be fine with this process. But it didn't. It included policy changes that are actually turning out to be highly controversial. And now we're discussing it afterwards. It's the new policy in the changes of existing policy in the thing that was rolled out on the 24th. That's the problem for me.
And actually, some people have concerns with pre-existing policy now that they know it's there, right? So it's both and, I think. Yeah. Are there any other comments? Let me just make sure that I'm not missing anything. Saida, if I'm pronouncing your name correctly, I hope. Would you mind
Yes, hi.
asking? Hi. Would you give your full name and department?
Sure. I apologize. I'm taking care of my daughter who's in a music therapy session. All right. So I posted a comment about the history that we all ought to know because this is not the first time that Cornell is trying to restrict free speech. So there was a policy in the past. It was unclear. It was contested. And then it was established that there would be no registration of protests. This happened, this started in 2012. So if you look at the document that I just posted in the chat, you will see a very brief summary of that history. There was a protest by Students for Justice in Palestine that was not registered. There was a counter protest that was registered, and the police disturbed the unregistered protest only. There was a faculty committee that was established. Three faculty members spent several months investigating this incident. So this shows how much dedication was actually spent on figuring out how to respond to this, how much of an anomaly this was, that there was this police response, and how much uproar this already caused. So this is 2012, 2013 we're talking about. And so in 2013, the University Assembly rejected President Korten's demand, request, injunction, whatever, to have registration of protests. So that already happened, right? It was considered a certain kind of a victory for free speech. And now we have it introduced a decade later and in the context of the war that's happening and the slaughter that's happening, right? So it is not coincidental that it's happening at this time, but it doesn't mean that it's going to be restricted to this time, right? This is a policy that will stand if we let it stand, no matter what. And so I find it really important to know that people had already considered this, spent a lot of time on it. This is not the first time that this is being brought to us. And it's only that we don't have enough institutional memory, and some people have changed, retired. So I know one of the people, Margaret Washington, she was on the committee that investigated this. She is an emerita now. So people move on. Korten is no longer president. Even President Garrett unfortunately passed away. She wasn't president long enough for this to even get established. So people have forgotten. But this shouldn't be forgotten. There's a reason why this was celebrated, and there's a reason why we need to insist on having free speech.
So,
Thank you.
Saida, this is great. Thank you for sharing the history. Institutional knowledge is critical to this. And so I think that also this was introduced in response to a review from the Office of Civil Rights. The concerns that were brought to the Office of Civil Rights are 100% because of the political situation we're in. So yes, the context does play a large role in this. And Richard, very much, I am neutral on this. I am not advocating in one way or the other. This is genuinely an opportunity for us to give feedback. And these kinds of things are very, very important for the central administration, the university assembly, to know and understand. So I'm so appreciative of this. So I want to make that clear. And then I wanted to give Isabel an opportunity. I would love to hear your comments as well, Isabel, that you put in the chat. And if you don't want to, I will read it out so that, because I'm not going to be providing necessarily everything here. So I'll just make sure it's in the audio. So Isabel McDonald, since the interim policy has been introduced, CUPD has been called and has responded to unlawful posting advertisement and unauthorized flyers for student postering on campus. This is new. Even if these are existing policies, their consequence and discipline is new. So I will make sure that that goes forward. And then just before we close up, oh yes, no worries, Isabel. I appreciate you putting it in the chat and contributing to the conversation. And I guess I feel like we've heard from everyone who's in the chat. Yes. And I think I would just want to remind everyone that one, this is valuable feedback. And I'm very, very appreciative that you're here. I feel like this is constructive. And so this engagement is really, really appreciative. I mean, I'm appreciative of this engagement. It's appreciated. And keep providing feedback to the University Assembly. I put the link in the chat. And we'll pick up this conversation again for the March Senate meeting. And for that Senate meeting, we're going to be considering the pending resolution that's been put forward by lots of faculty, dozens of faculty, and multiple senators. The provost and general counsel will be at that meeting. And so, again, let's try to be constructive as possible so that we get the right policies in place. And I thank you all. And have a good afternoon and don't get too wet.
Bye.